Podcasting from behind her locked bathroom door, the only quiet place in the house, this is the Homeschool Sanity Show, a twice-monthly podcast with expert advice for happier, healthier homeschool living. And now, here's your host, Christian psychologist and homeschool mom of six, Dr. Melanie Wilson.
Welcome. Today, our topic is, can math actually be fun? My guest today, Dr. Stanley Schmidt, is going to tell us that yes, it can be. He is a former high school teacher and college math professor who retired and eventually started writing a math curriculum called Life of Fred. I read a review of this curriculum when my oldest son was in elementary school. He was a voracious reader, and he took to this curriculum that is quite literally a novel approach to teaching math. I frequently found my son laughing about Fred's latest escapades while he was learning his math lessons. I was using only the original Life of Fred math curriculum with my oldest son, and he went straight from it to taking AP calculus and statistics and getting A's in both of them. My son was so enamored with math as a result of using Life of Fred that he planned to major in math in college until he discovered that college math textbooks really weren't as fun as Life of Fred. And another personal anecdote that I wanted to share was that at one point, my son emailed Dr. Schmidt to ask if his solution, his way of solving the problem, was as correct as the way that Life of Fred presented it, and Dr. Schmidt was so kind to respond to him via email and say, yes, that is also correct. And I have to believe that having that kind of an interaction with a math author really just encouraged him and made him feel that much more positively about math. The rest of my children are using or will be using Life of Fred in the fall, and so I am so honored to have Stanley Schmidt join me for this interview today, and I'm going to call him Stan by his request. Stan, can you please explain the Life of Fred approach and how it's different from most homeschool math curriculum?
It's probably different than virtually any other approach. I wrote the books starting in 1998 as if I were the student. Which way would I like a math book to be written? Most of the math books that I've seen and the ones you talked about, Melanie, in terms of the college textbooks, are just, so here's how to do it. Here is 30 problems to do. And they just repeat this over and over again, the old expression of drill and kill. Instead, we've got our little hero, Fred, who was born in one of the books, and grows up to the age of six. And in the course of his adventures in life, he first finds, he experiences a need for a particular kind of mathematics, and then we do it. It is, the order is important. When I was teaching college and high school, the question that I and every other math teacher received was, oh, when are we ever going to use this stuff? Well, in having Fred start with the need for something first and then showing how it's used, it creates a whole different feeling for the children in terms of their responsiveness to it.
Right, absolutely. And you have really included a lot of humor. I was referring to that when I was talking about my son laughing at the escapades that Fred has throughout the curriculum. You've really taken a risk by using humor. I can tell you that as someone who uses humor in her speeches and in her writing. What's been the biggest challenge for you as the author of this curriculum, having been using humor?
I can't avoid it. I'm sorry. Other people at church have accused me all the time of being chronically happy. To be otherwise, given what we have in life, would be blasphemy. You know, mm-hmm. You hear people complaining about having a hangnail in the wrist. what Fred happens in his Fred's life is just part of real living. Now, in beginning algebra, for example, he's 5 years old, and he's accidentally drafted into the United States Army and sent off to Lampasas, Texas. You know, it's just the kind of things that happen to six-year-olds, perhaps, or five-year-olds. What the heck? And he has bad things happen in his life, too, because it's a real life. But the bad things are... One of my students phoned me and asked me, why doesn't Fred take revenge when C.C. Kolbach, the typical villain in the books, does bad things to Fred? And I had explained to him that Fred isn't the kind of person who does revenge. That's not the way that we want to live. There's no real challenge in terms of writing the humor into him. When I was in college, our math department would meet in one of the two classrooms, and in the next door, the English department would meet. And we had the 21 members of the math department. And every 5 minutes, you'd hear in the English department laughter boiling forth. But I never heard it in the math department. It just didn't happen. I mean, people don't do that. And God has given me the gift. It's not my own thing of doing it at all, of having both the math and the human side. And so this is my calling. I see it to put forth a curriculum that is different in many ways than any other curriculum that's out there.
And you have, you know, added a number of books, elementary level books, since I first discovered Life of Fred. And you have really been very careful to include a lot of other interdisciplinary material into your math book. Can you talk about why it is that you did that? Yes.
Yeah, because, Melanie, I don't teach math. In my head, when I'm writing these things, I'm teaching children. And because of that, I mean, that's the more natural way to teach. You don't say, like in the government schools, you have 50 minutes worth of history, you ring a bell, and then you go to another room, and then you have 50 minutes worth of English, you ring a bell, and you go and you have 50 minutes of math. That's an unnatural act. So that in all the books, I teach as the way I would teach my own children. In the beginning, Apple's book, the first book in the whole series, we talk about deciduous teeth. Now, you know what deciduous trees are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what deciduous teeth are? I'm going to embarrass the host of this program.
I have no idea what a deciduous tooth is.
Yeah, but the kids who read this book at the, say, first grade level find out what deciduous teeth are.
Okay.
And that's the official dental term for baby teeth that fall out. You know, when we talk about the Greek who was killed for being rude, I won't quiz you on all these things, but it was Archimedes.
Please don't.
I shan't. I'll be nice to you. But Archimedes was killed because he was rude. You know, or herbivores and carnivores, or the story of the Titanic. That's all in the first Apple's book, which is a slow-moving book compared with many of the others. We do it in all the books and go through and talk about everything, whether it's poetry or history, you know, or art, and stir it all in together. And it makes it much more palatable for the children. I speak of children, but, you know, the calculus book is the first 2 years of college calculus. And then I've written an upper division math book called Linear Algebra that's usually taken by mathematics majors as a junior level college book. I've got a one-year college statistics book. I talk about kids, but these are people that are getting up there in age.
Right. I mean, you have the whole gamut of books.
Well, if you count the four language arts books that came out last year for English at the high school level, where we do all of everything except I can't do essays, especially because no one can read them for them. But we do all the other stuff. You know, how many tenses are there in English? Oh, that stops most people. But we describe the 12 tenses in English, for example, and do all the kinds of fun stuff. I wrote a book on prayer, prayers at 8:30 as part of the series, which is a thing that's called, another one, financial choices for high school students. You know, the usual stuff, you have a high school student and what's a credit card and those kinds of silly stuff. But I talk about all of the different aspects of financial living in our world, including one chapter on how to retire in 24 years and give out the outline. It's not, nothing is for certain in the financial mm-hmm. world, but it gives a reasonable way for kids to realize they could retire in 24 years. You know, it's no good when you're 80 years old to read that. But you know, let's make it fun. What the heck?
I know one of the aspects of Life of Fred that is different is you don't have just pages and pages of problems for particular skills that you're teaching. Why is that?
Right. Well, and drive some of the people who are crazy, who have been indoctrinated with Saxon and many of the other uh-huh. ones that are called the drill and kill stuff. The question I sort of ask is, you know, for parents that have children, how many times do you have to ask your kids to clean up their rooms? Oh, a million times, right? How many times do you have to tell your kids that we're going out for pizza tonight and a movie afterwards? Once.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with Life of Fred is that it's that second approach. If it's palatable, if it's fun, then kids take to it almost immediately. And the kind of questions that we have, often called your turn to play sections at the end of many of the daily lessons, are not the kind of beat it into your head stuff, but here's a kind of twist to it that you weren't expecting. And, you know, I have three or four problems, but they require some thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on whether you want your child to be someone who grows up and works at what one of the places I talked about in one of my books was called Taco Quacko, where everybody wears duck hats and says, you know, would you like fries with your order? Or do you want your children to own the business, to be the thinking ones? And in our world today, it's the people who are able to solve real problems that are compensated appropriately. And we want our children to be in that direction.
Right. One of the other things that I appreciate is that after that your turn to play section, you have the answers to those questions right there. That's
uh-huh.
very different.
Well, after you get to fractions, Life of Fred fractions, which they start in the fifth grade, no earlier, please, I don't want the parents to be helping or teaching or tutoring the math at all. This is really weird. I don't want them in the process because it is so important that our children learn how to learn by reading. And mm-hmm. that skill has to be done without mommy, you know, coming and helping baby bear when baby bear cries. You know, biologically, moms are programmed that if baby bear is having problems, you know, they come running. And of course, many children are human. And because of that, they seek labor-saving devices. And mom is the greatest labor-saving device there is. You know, but learning how to learn by reading is the way that you, when you get to college and in later life, that's the things that you do. When you were in kindergarten, 95% of what you learned was from the teacher's lips. When I mm-hmm. bought a Costco greenhouse several years ago, it came in three boxes, 70, 80, and 90-pound boxes, and a 56-page instruction book how to put it together. You had to learn how to read, you know, to do it. And that's true in adult life very much. And so I want to point the kids toward adulthood. And so having the answers there, either right after the questions or later in the book, depending on which book it is, you know, is part of, okay, moms, back off. If kids have problems, on my website, lifeoffred.com, one word, lifeoffred, you know, it's my email address and, heavens, my home phone number. What other author does this? I'm not in the process to make a buck. That's not my motivation. Or to write another book that's identical to the ones that have, you know, that have already been written. And that's why I do that, I'll make that offer. And very often, if a child comes to mom and mom says, "Well, Dr. Schmidt says I'm not allowed to help you," email him. They say, "Oh my gosh, I can't write to Dr. Schmidt." And they go and they look at the book again and they say, "Oh, it was right there. I missed it." You know, and they learn that they can learn on their own, which is a very important thing to have happen.
Your new series, for me, it's newer since I first started using Life of Fred, your newer series of elementary books. Do you have any tips for parents who are using those books? Because it's a different way of teaching math. You know, most of us who are even teaching elementary math are used to just putting a workbook in front of our student and then maybe helping them if they get stuck, right? But this
right.
is a completely different approach. So what tips do you have for us using your elementary books?
I got a pair of grandsons several years ago, and they came over to our house. You know how grandparents take care of grandsons?
Mm-hmm.
And one time, they requested that my wife, Lynn, pull off the shelf, I think it was the third book, the Life of Fred Katz book, and they requested that the three of them read the book together. Lynn sat in the middle of the two kids, boys, and either sat on either side of them, and the lessons, there's 19 lessons in the elementary series books, and they're 4 pages long and 16-point type. They're not long. And they would take turns reading a paragraph or two and passing the book around. After the 4 pages, there was some easy kind of but thought-provoking questions in the Your Turn to Play sections. Each kid had a clipboard and a pencil. They would work out separately with Lynn between them, getting the answers. Then they compare it with the answers in the back of the book. And they read 3 or 4 chapters on the afternoon they were there doing that. But if they request doing it, the number of raves that I've received over the years from everybody on the website, I have 2 different sections, and the raves just go on for pages and pages and pages and pages. The fun one that I had was one that said, and I'll quote him, "I wanted to let you know what a joy it is to study your math book series. I am an attorney and a CPA. And I decided to start from the beginning of your beginning algebra book. What a great way it is to teach math. My wife thinks it's humorous that I come home after a long day at work and pull out your math book after dinner to enjoy myself. Your teaching method is compelling and entertaining." I mean, whoa.
Wow.
And then I get tons of ones from kids. 2 moms recently, separately, have emailed me with the statement that their kids, out of the blue, have requested that their birthday cakes be cut in the shape of Fred's head. 2 other moms, independent of each other, have sent me photos of their children reading Life of Fred. Each of them were sitting in a tree.
Oh.
And just, it's darling, this is the kinds of stuff that you know, that go together with that when we don't have, you know, tears as the major component of math learning.
Mm. That's just really wonderful. Now, are you suggesting that we wait until our children ask to do Life of Fred if they're younger?
No, they don't know about Life of Fred. You can't do it that way around there. I mean,
Once we started, should we wait for them to say, let's do another chapter?
No.
Okay.
I haven't spent a dime on advertising in the last 6 years or so. I wanted to keep the prices down on the books. And my books are about a third of the price than anybody else. Teaching textbooks is really expensive, for example. But once the kids get started in the elementary series, those first books, all the way up through the intermediate series, the 13 books there, they're each a lesson. Each is 4 pages long in big type. One lesson does not take an hour to do at all.
Mm-hmm.
And kids often will do 3 or 4 daily lessons at a time because they just, you know, some
right.
of the parents have to take their kids' book away from them in the evening. The worst complaint I ever had, I loved my the woman complained to me. She said, my son wants to do Life of Fred in the morning before we read the Bible.
Oh,
I'm embarrassed.
<Uh-oh.
laughs> But that was the worst complaint I've ever received. Once you get them started, the discipline is you know, read a chapter, which is a 4 pages thing. But the overwhelming consensus of kids are that, you know, this is different than any of the other
mm-hmm.
stuff that I've been exposed to. I love it when they do something else first, whether it's Saxon or Matthew, C or the rest, because then when they get mm-hmm. this, they just go, oh, I see the difference.
Right.
What about
older students? You've already given us, I think, a really good tip, which is, you know, not to be too quick to come to a student's aid and, you know, allow them. Not at all. Do you have any other ideas for us as far as working with older students who are using Life of Fred? Any other suggestions?
Well, you're not working with them anymore after a fraction or at fractions.
Yeah,
You know, you had mentioned the reading things. Kids get all the other stuff like as part of what happens when they read Fred, including learning a love of reading, because
mm-hmm.
the one thing that will teach kids the joy of reading is reading stuff that they love to read.
Right.
You don't see many people, adults or older kids, picking up textbooks in math to read for
mm-hmm.
pleasure, like that CPA guy was doing. It's part of what happens there.
What about checking their work? Do you recommend that you are going in and just making sure that they're getting it?
Oh, the kids, sometimes the tendency is just to read the story
mm-hmm.
and let the heck with the math kind of stuff. A 10-year-old at our church, and this was many years ago, he's now in college, said, can I borrow the calculus book? 544 pages, and he's 10 years old. And I said, okay, Mario, you can borrow the calculus book. And 3 weeks later, he came back. He says, I've read it. And I said, you read the calculus, 2 years of calculus. And he says, well, I skipped the math.
Yeah, right. I just read the story.
Yeah, which is, you know, Mary Poppins was right. A spoonful of sugar doesn't hurt.
No.
So in the fractions book, for example, we've got the lessons, the 32 lessons, and your turn to play with the answers right there after each lesson. But after every 5 or 6 lessons, we have the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge is where moms get interacted with the children. It is 10 questions from the beginning of the book to that point. So after chapter 5, we have a bridge. After chapter 10, we have the second bridge, which covers from the beginning of the book up to that point. All right, 10 questions. The answers are in the back of the book. Mm-hmm. Once the child has written down the answers to those 10 questions, the mother and the child together go and look in the back of the book to see how many of the 10 questions they got right. So far, okay? Then, I require that they get 90%, 9 out of 10 questions right, to cross the bridge and go from chapter 5, for example, to chapter 6, or from chapter 10 to chapter 11. And the natural question that comes up is, I only got 7 right. That's fine, because at the bridge, I had a quiz, 10 questions, but I also have listed a second try of a second set of 10 questions. So if they blew it on the first one, there's no penalty. We don't work with that kind of punishment stuff or anything like that. But the natural consequence is you have a second chance to earn the right to go on to the second, past that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a third try at every bridge and a fourth try at every bridge and a fifth try at every bridge in, for example, the fractions book. Well, what happens? You don't have to say, you stupid head, you didn't do it right. You got to pay attention to minus signs, all the stuff that moms like to do. You don't do that. You're with the child. And instead, okay, they recognize, I don't want to do another 10 questions. Mm-hmm. But, you got to earn the right. So they become more attentive without any harping from the parents. It's a natural consequence. And
right.
The first time around, they miss a bunch of questions. And the first bridge, they may work up to the fourth try before they get it. But after a while, they start to realize, hey, I'm going to get smart here a little bit. And they pay attention to those minus signs and stuff. And they get better at the bridges. At the end of the book is the final bridge, which contains more questions. And, of course, 5 tries to graduate from the book. And this is where parents are going to be involved. At the fractions level and beyond.
All
so
right,
that,
very
yeah,
good.
That the kids don't do what Mario did in my calculus book.
Right. Do you think, Stan, that there is a type of student that is best suited to this curriculum? I know that my oldest son is an advanced learner, and I mentioned that he was a voracious reader, so it was a natural fit for him. Do you think that there's kind of a prototype of kids that are just going to gravitate to Life of Fred, or do you think really any kind of student will love it?
It definitely does not work with the very grumpy. The very grumpy students do not do it well. Now, let's talk about the extremes. And this was the problem when I was teaching high school and college, is how in the world you teach to the middle third, but the fast students are bored and the slow students, are mystified.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we talked about with the bridges was one way at the speed that is there so that the slow students can proceed at their own rate. On the fast end is the people like your son who are most often ignored when it comes to learning more than just the stuff that is the standard material. For example, in the geometry book, we've got the regular chapters of the book, the 13 chapters that cover all of classical, regular high school geometry. Parenthetically, in every one of the books, we present more material than is often taught in the college classroom. And I taught geometry and algebra and trig in the college classrooms, even though they're high school subjects. There's more material than I taught in high school, in college, in these books. But take the geometry book, for example. Besides the 13 chapters, we have chapter 5.5 and chapter 7.5 and chapter 11.5 extra chapters that talk about stuff that would be like an honors course that you can include in there. Some of the stuff is kind of classical, the non-Euclidean geometries. Most people have heard about such things. Or in chapter 12 and a half, geometry in four dimensions. We got a point, a segment, a square, a cube, as we build up into the one, two, three, four, third dimensions. And I draw a four-dimensional cube called a tesseract. And we talk about all the dimensions up to the 14th dimension and show how to know how many squares there are in a 14th dimensional cube. Weird. The last chapter, in terms of wanting stuff for honor students and the faster kids, is the flawless geometry. Euclid wrote in roughly 300 BC his famous book, The Elements, which has had more editions than any other math book except the Bible. Euclid's The Elements. Lincoln, who lived in the 1800s, was studying Euclid. But it was discovered that we're using Euclid's geometry, the one that's taught in every high school classroom in the universe, you can prove without too much problem that every triangle is isosceles, has two equal sides. You can prove that a right angle is congruent to an obtuse angle, which is bigger than a right angle. I do it in the book here, in that 13th and a half chapter, and I present flawless geometry, which was invented a little over 100 years ago, which was a 19-year-old named Robert L. Moore who invented this geometry originally. And it doesn't have the errors that Euclid has in it in terms of being able to prove nonsense. But that stuff, whoa, most high school teachers don't even know that one. But I present that there. So I present for all of different levels of kids.
And you've already covered the fact that adults can use this too.
Oh, I get so many, the moms who, can I quote another one? From the time I was in the second grade, I cried my way through math. In high school, I wrote my best friend's term papers, and she did my algebra. Now, here I am with your book, and yet I'm finding myself sitting at the kitchen table, giggling over the storylines, working out the problems, and actually getting it for the first time in my life, 4 exclamation points. I mean, as long as you're not grumpy.
As long as you're not grumpy.
Yes.
I love it. Well, Sam, do you have any future plans for Life of Fred you want to tell us about?
I'm working on the 35th book right now.
Wow.
It's hard to keep up with me because this is my calling, is to do this kind of thing. And I've finished it's still at the printers, Life of Fred Chemistry for High School Chemistry. That's out there now. I'm currently working on a kind of a fanciful book. I always wanted to do some of the upper division math courses like algebra, abstract algebra, which is not the same as regular algebra, or topology. But you can't write a Fred story as easily because there's nothing to sort of grab onto. It's too abstract. But I'm writing right now, I'm 50, 60 pages into 5 days. Fred will be teaching 4 different upper division math courses. Modern algebra and set theory is another one. Abstract arithmetic and topology. And we hear the first 5 days of Fred's lectures into each of these 4 fields. It turns out that in upper division math is so much different than freshman, sophomore calculus. I was sitting in my calculus class as a student, and around both elbows of me were these engineering types who wanted to get answers to questions. Mm-hmm. How fast is the rod rotating? All that kind of stuff. And my grades in calculus, my 4 final grades, were A, C, B, and C.
Wow.
I was the first one in my clan of family or anything to ever have calculus. But, that was terrible. When I got up into upper division math, in these 4 courses I've named just now, the whole flavor changes completely. The engineers are gone. They're off into engineering land, and we have pure mathematics, and all of it becomes solving puzzles, proving, can you prove that this is true in, you know, the particular thing like set theory? And it's, whoa, it's just like good geometry was in the 10th grade, where we would, can you prove that the base angles of an isosceles triangle are congruent? And we have four different proofs in beginning out and in beginning geometry. And so in these courses up here, it's just a series of puzzles. Can you creatively find it? And your answer is going to be different than mine, just like you mentioned your son writing to me, his answer different than mine. And it's I just breathed a fresh, you know, whoa, why didn't anybody ever tell me that math could be so wonderful once you got rid of the engineers? I'm speaking very prejudicially. But it you know, and so I want to give a taste in the book called 5 Days that I'm writing right now of what real upper division math feels like. You know, and just playing.
Oh, that sounds great. It sounds like it would be a great gift for someone who loves math or who has learned to love math because of your curriculum. Dan, where can people purchase this fantastic curriculum that we've been talking all about, and what can people expect to find on your website?
Lifeofred.com. People sometimes write Life of Red. They forget the second F. Lifeofred.com takes you to my website, Polka Dot Publishing, and it contains everything. It contains, in the upper left-hand box, there's 9 boxes there like tic-tac-toe. Upper left-hand box has a list of all the books in the order they're to be taken and a list of all of the contents of each of the books. In one of the other boxes are sample pages from each of the books. In the two right boxes, there are just raves after raves after raves going on. The center box is ordering, and it takes you to our distributor, Z-Twist Books, who ships to everybody in the state in United States at no charge.
All right.
I tell you, I'm not out to make a buck on this kind of stuff. And they're the ones that get the books first. They sell to other people, other vendors, you know, like Rainbow Resources and the rest. But we sell directly, and it's the best place to go to get them. The site itself there has all of the regular things that you'd want to know, what, you know, what's special about Fred. And there's the frequently asked questions, where do I begin my child in the series? And there's also one tagline that takes you to my personal website, stanleyschmidt.com. And there is a whole different, you know, there is me as a painter. There is me as the Christmas poems that I write each year. There is the Stan that is sermons, videos of sermons that I've given in Sunday morning services. A whole bunch of different stuff like that. That's the personal website, stanleyschmidt.com. But the main site, lifeofred.com, is where I think most of the questions, and it's also got my email address there so they can get a hold of me. With more questions.
And I will be sure to add those links to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at homeschoolsanity.com. And if you will scroll down to Can Math Actually Be Fun, you will find those. Stan, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy life. It's just been a pleasure to learn more about this curriculum. I learned something, and I've been using the curriculum for a while with my kids, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us for the Homeschool Sanity Show with Dr. Melanie Wilson. Visit Melanie at psychowith6.com, that's the number 6, for more sanity-saving ideas. The Homeschool Sanity Show is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.